The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
When you go, how do you want your body to be disposed of?
Right now, I'd say probably by burial, not a very elaborate ceremony, anything like that. Keep it simple.
I believe in cremation. I'm afraid of fire, but I mean, that kind of thing scares me. But as far as cremation goes, I think I'd rather be my ashes spread over someplace, you know, rather than being in the ground. It appeals to me more.
What do you think about cremation?
I'm heartily in favor of it. That's what I intend to do with myself. I intend to, will those vital parts of my body to hospitals with regard to eye banks, kidney banks, and the rest they can burn.
What about cremation?
No, I wouldn't want to be cremated.
Why?
I'm afraid of fire.
Scattering your ashes at sea or anything like that?
No, I just want a very nice, pleasant funeral. Have all the family and friends bring me flowers. That's all. Nothing special.
What's it all about, this business of dying? It's like asking, what is life and why are we here? What is the purpose of our life and where do we go after death? Now, obviously, there's a great deal of religion tied up in it all and ideas about what happens to this body at death. Well, increasingly, people are deciding to let science have a go at their body after they die. The younger generation seems almost entirely taken up with the idea of either cremation or a simple funeral of some kind, or the traditional one of family and friends, but more and more there has been a leaning away from the traditional and sometimes very expensive funeral service that we have been so familiar with through the 20s, 30s, and 40s in the United States. Some have said that the entire psychology, the entire approach to dying and what happens after death changed at about the time of the Civil War, when the bodies of loved ones were brought home from the battlefields and the American funeral service in its own unique way began to develop. Well, every single day in the newspapers, the news media, we hear tragedies. Whether it's a plane crash abroad, murders, suicides, accidents, and all of us have been to funeral services where a loved one was being interred. All of us have been to other funeral services where an acquaintance or a business friend was being buried. And it's never fun. Not for a minute is it any fun. We can all, as little children, remember the time we were first exposed to the business of dying when perhaps a grandfather or a grandparent was being buried and we had to go to the funeral parlor. We listened to the soloists and the organ music. We saw the grim and somber trappings of the funeral. We remember the smell, perhaps, of the flowers. We saw the lilies and the parchment-like skin of the person interred in the, or actually in the coffin, not yet interred, and sometimes raised so that at least adults in the audience can view the face of the person who has died during the service. And that wasn't fun either. How well I remember being snatched back from the edge of the grave where they had the kind of silver bars and they were letting the coffin down to my own grandfather when I was a very tiny boy. It made quite an impression on me, it frightened me half out of my wits, and I've never quite forgot it. This business of dying is not fun. It's very unpleasant. There's been a great deal about the high cost of dying. There's been a trend in the news of the past several years to expose a great deal of over-expenditure in the part of the creation of large burial parks where thousands upon thousands are interred, and there is a certain, perhaps, competition among the public about where they want to be buried and about a prestigious place to be interred, or whether or not they want to go the cheaper route. And there's been squabbles even legally, as you know, recently, and those that are operating small plane charter business, new laws have had to be written which either bar the spreading of ashes over adjacent waterways, coastal waterways, estuaries, bays, and the like. I think they require a certain number of miles offshore, and also whether or not they can be scattered over the desert, because there were cut-rate bargain areas where people could be buried for only a few hundred dollars or less, as opposed to the traditional, very expensive method of dying. But you know, the funeral homes do have an important point that they must make, and that is that funeral homes do necessarily provide a service. And while it's a service, it must also be handled as a business. Now, obviously, they attempt to subordinate, and well, they might, and well, you would if you were involved in any such business, subordinate the business aspects of it, and to emphasize the spiritual and the emotional. They have to be at once a psychologist, perhaps a spiritual counselor. They have to handle it with a certain gentleness and understanding of people's emotional turmoil. Many funeral parlor directors have admitted that they are in the business, obviously, like any other business, to make money. But on the other hand, some of those same people are very careful to say that they do not try to take advantage of anyone. Now, unfortunately, as is true in any businesses, there are those who are irresponsible. And some of these few irresponsible ones have unfortunately brought about a very great business, or a very great deal, rather, of poor or bad publicity toward the funeral business as a whole. So many of the people that we have talked to have been a little bit upset by this, because over-sensationalization in the media sometimes of the cost of funerals has driven more and more people toward the cheaper economy package, and many, many people today want to be cremated and have their ashes spread abroad at sea or elsewhere in order to avoid the high cost of dying. It's not usually the dead person, though, that has anything to say about the cost, is it? It's the living who want to make amends. Well, today there is a point to the high cost of dying, all right, because coffins cost money. And the average funeral, it said, is about $1,000 today. But when you consider the cost of coffins, and they can go all the way up into the many, many thousands, as you know, down to a very few hundred, as you may know. There is the hearse, of course, that must be paid for. Sometimes, because of our rapidity of movement, where about a quarter of the population or more moves in any one year, the breakup of the old family structure of two or three generations living on the same farm plot year after year, and therefore the attention given to the burial of grandfather in a small church spot in a rural community has been breaking up here of late. In our urbanization, our massive megalopolises, and our societies have tended to rip up these old family ties, where the kids are scattered over about 10 states a couple of thousand miles apart. So oftentimes there is expense of an airplane trip. Many a small charter business makes a lot of money on flying a coffin with a corpse or a body in it, maybe many, many hundreds of miles, to a burial place. Of course, airplanes and trains are used in this way, or automobiles. The funeral parlor costs money. The plot, depending upon where you buy a funeral plot, might cost $350 as a minimum. In some areas, on up to more money, sometimes far less than that. It depends. The headstone of the plaque, if it's just a simple bronze one, might be a very few hundred, or it might go up to $1,000 or more, depending upon the workmanship and the size, the quality of the stone, and so on. But the average funeral runs to be about $1,000 today, they say. So this is not an attack upon the business of funeral parlors. They are quite necessary, and of necessity, a delicate and a sensitive service that must be provided. Law requires, and of course good taste, and I think being aware of people's spiritual needs also, even ethically or morally, would require that there be such a thing as the business of funeral directors or funeral parlors and burial plots and the like. But people's attitudes are changing about the whole business of dying. Some high costs, some exorbitant ones, usually the fault of the living, who want to make amends to the dead, sensational articles, and so on. The trend toward large parks, as I said, where thousands are buried, and the trend away from the smaller churchyard plots, the breakup of family ties, urbanization, moving, travel, the tendency of the younger generation to ignore the older generation, the discarded older generation in our society. All of this has tended toward more and more impersonalization and commercialization of death. And so we need to know exactly what is death. And that's like asking what is life and what happens after this life is over. We need to go thoroughly into it from a scientific point of view, as well as from a religious point of view, and find out, what does the Bible say about death? What does science say about death? How can you prove what death is? Do you know that science isn't even sure when a person is dead? You know, there is still a great deal of disagreement about precisely when death occurs. that some say it's when the heart stops beating, and others say it's when the brain stops functioning. And now recently there was a court suit, I believe back east somewhere, where there was a case brought up of an Israeli boy that had fallen into a deep pit of some sort. He'd been down there for quite a while. There was no respiratory activity. The EEG even did not indicate any brain activity. That's an electroencephalograph, I believe, did not indicate any brain activity whatsoever, yet artificially, I believe, with a kind of an artificial iron lung and with intravenous feeding, they kept trying to bring this boy back for a two-week span when there was no brain activity, and the sensational aspects of the case were that the boy did recover and, according to all reports, is perfectly normal even today. So you get into the bizarre thing, maybe we can bring it up a little bit later, about people who are worried about being buried alive. You know, the people have been buried in caskets that have little breathing tubes run all the way down to them and with catches on the inside of the coffin lid so that in the event, I mean, people have prepared for this eventuality before their death so that in the event somebody made a mistake and buried them alive, they bury them with a shovel in there and a lid that can be released from inside, because I guess there have been bizarre cases of graves dug up later on, and there was macabre proof that a person had been buried alive. Now, thankfully, that has never happened, but perhaps once out of tens and hundreds of thousands of cases, hopefully even more than that. There's a great deal, then, of superstition, a great deal of the fantasy, a great deal of the psychological and religious aspects in the entire study of death and what happens after death. Well, take a look at the booklet that we're going to send you. If you'll write in for it, we'll get it to you in the mail by return mail as quickly as possible. After death, then what? And then we'll hear some interviews from people just like you, and also people in the funeral director business, and what they have to say about the entire subject of dying.
Everyone in town likes Harry Richards. He's a man who always has time for his wife and children.
People rely on Harry. In June, when his daughter was married,
the whole town wanted to come. Last week,
Harry Richards died. Now there's a tremendous vacuum left in the lives of his family and friends. They wonder why. Why Harry?
What is death? Is there life after death?
You probably ask yourself these same questions.
Now discover God's answers. Read the booklet, After Death, Then What? This booklet gives the answers from your Bible to the nagging questions which plague everyone when death becomes a reality. Send today for your free copy of After Death, Then What? You need to know the encouraging truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
Mr. Lamb, after many, many years in the mortuary service, how do you find people in general feel toward funeral directors?
Well, funeral directing business is a very sensitive business because it deals with the emotions and the sympathies of people. It takes a great deal of tact and empathy to be able to serve people satisfactorily. We do not seem to have much trouble on our local scene, inasmuch as we have served this community for over a half a century. And most of our business is confined to people who we have served before or who are intimately acquainted with us.
You think most people are afraid of dying?
Yes, I do. Unless they're really religious or something and they believe that there is an afterlife, definitely. And they will join their relatives or the people that they love and something like that.
Doesn't the funeral director have to be kind of a combination of psychologist, minister, counselor, friend, etc.?
Yes, I guess so. You have to like people, I think, to be a funeral director, because you're dealing with, well, you have to be very careful because everyone you see every day is emotionally upset. So if you use the wrong word, the wrong term, the wrong phrase, you may upset them even more so. And so you want to be sympathetic with people. You can't empathize with people. I mean, that's our position. You would just be in tears constantly. You can't do that. But you have to be sympathetic and guide them.
It's a thing of uncertainty. And any person that goes off into the uncertain this great fear. You know, I mean, nobody's ever come back and explained to us what's on the other side. And when you leave this world physically, so it puts up a blanket of uncertainty. And any time you're dealing in uncertain areas, there's fear.
Would you say then that the real purpose of the funeral is more to meet the needs and the psychological needs of the living?
A funeral is for the living. It is not for the dead. I definitely agree that it does meet the psychological needs. The closing of a book, if you will. If you've seen a life, people like to eventually be able to say, well, that's the end. It terminates. Nothing is more certain than death, and I think that people fear it only if they think it is unknown, and the more known you can make it, the easier it is for people.
It's the end of a chapter, the closing of a book, and we feel that this is something that the family that's still living needs. It's an emotional release for them. And as funeral directors, we are here to meet those needs. And even if it's just arranging the flowers or playing the music or fixing their hair just the way that they're used to having it done, so that people recognize them and see this as a final chapter in the living's life.
The business of dying, the high cost of dying, do you think it's altogether too expensive?
I think so. To an extreme, some people would consider funerals almost a status symbol, the way they'll spend thousands upon thousands of dollars like a wedding or something like that. And now I think we're seeing a reaction against that. You've seen cremation and people going in for a more simple type of ceremony. So I think that the public is becoming aware that it's completely commercialized, and we will see a reaction against that sort of thing.
You feel that society and custom in general has set a certain minimum standard as to what a funeral should be in this country?
Yes, I do. I think very definitely. I think a lot of families, even in death, they want to keep up with the Joneses. If a neighbor or some member of a family they know has passed away or died, they put on this big show. They know another family, they would feel rather bad if they didn't also put on a big show. And I think that another big point is should be pointed out is a lot of times people will not treat the person, the member of their family or whatever, as nice as they should have when they were alive, and maybe have a guilty conscience when they died. So I think a lot of times people will come in and try to spend a lot of money on a funeral to solve their conscience, more or less. And I think this is one big part that most people don't really realize, even subconsciously. I don't think they realize it.
The high cost of dying, you think funerals, that sort of thing, are all too expensive?
No, I don't think anything is too expensive for a person if he feels, he's involved, egocentric. Whoever's involved, you know, the ego is involved, and they want to die, go out just like they were living, you know. So a person, I don't feel that funerals are too high.
I think it is, yes, because my father died, and the expenses that were, you know, the coffin and the everything like that. But I suppose it depends on the individual relative. If you want to be buried in a $1,000 coffin or not, you know. But I think it depends what you want, you know.
Again, let me restate that doesn't mean that we are going to tell anybody what to do. If they want nothing, they get nothing. If they want everything, they get everything. And anything in between, whatever the person wants to establish as and by them I mean the living. Again, as we discussed before, a funeral is for the living and not for the dead. But it's very permissive, whatever they want.
Joe, there's been a great deal of talk in recent years about the high cost of dying. Could you explain to us what's involved in the funeral from, say, a mortician's point of view?
Yes, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that the general public are not aware of, dealing with the legal requirements at death, the health requirements, and so forth. There's the overhead of the funeral home, the establishment that is involved, the employees, the building itself, the caskets, the embalming of the body even. All this plays a big part in the cost of the funeral.
What portion of a funeral service does the grave and related cemetery expenses account for?
That, of course, varies upon the need of the family or a time of service. Often the interment charges and ancillary charges that are auxiliary to a standard service amount to a great deal more than the actual funeral itself. These items are largely grave and cemetery purchases and charges as opening and closing, entombment in mausoleum, the charges connected with that, or other interment services as such as cremation, where at time of need they are expected to be paid in cash. Often at time of need, money is tight or unavailable. So in a sense, the mortician is accommodates his family by acting as banker. And he will add many of these accommodation items to the cost of the funeral service, and which will render it sometimes to seem, very often it gets above a certain amount which is considered high. And that should not be chargeable, however, to a standard funeral service, but as a gesture and a courtesy on the part of the mortician.
Do the grave and cemetery expenses often run more than the actual funeral service itself?
Very often. When people have no arrangements for need, in advance of the need, and have to acquire everything at the last moment when death has occurred, you will often find that the grave and cemetery charges are at least as much or more, usually more, than a funeral service. And these, as I said before, must be paid immediately.
Do you think the funeral industry is like a lot of industries where the dishonesty perhaps in a few contributes to,
let's say, currently a bad image for the many?
Yes, I think so. I think any profession you go into, you're going to have a few people who are unethical. And I think
that the funeral profession has their lot. But I don't think that all funeral directors should be put in the same barrel with those funeral directors who are unethical, because I think as a whole, the majority of funeral directors are in the business to help the bereaved, to help the people.
Then a great deal of the cost of a funeral actually lies in the fact that there is somebody there in the community that is providing a service, that is established, someone is competent there to help a bereaved person in a time of need.
Very definitely. The behind-the-scenes cost requires at least a basic amount that the funeral director has to charge for the overhead and so forth.
In other words, you feel that many people may be, let's say, upset about the high cost of dying because all they see is an hour ceremony, yet there are hours and hours of full-time work that by several, maybe half a dozen or a dozen people that go into providing their hour or hour and a half service.
That's right. The only thing most people see is the simple service or the service that they see at the church, the funeral home. That's all they see. They don't go see what goes on behind the scenes with all these different people who have different functions, who have different jobs, and they're doing their jobs. And that's what makes the funeral service go off so smoothly.
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's in-the-home educational service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education, biblical understanding. The Plain Truth's timely, informative articles deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
Funeral directors know there is a certain psychological value in the traditional open casket ceremony. First, the shock of simply facing the fact that a loved one has indeed died. Many people endure fantasies through much of their life, not really sure that a loved one has departed, especially people killed on the battlefield or hundreds of thousands of miles away. They dream, they think, fantasies occur to them from time to time. People have gone to psychiatric help or psychologists about this because they thought when they saw someone turn a corner that it was their departed loved one or their husband or their friend that they knew. And they can't seem to really come to grips with the reality that a person is gone. And so there is this value to it. There's also the opportunity for one to pay one's respects. And, of course, perhaps to take opportunity following the death to rid oneself of certain guilt feelings of not having been close enough in companionship with a friend, not having thought to write or send cards or attend the last birthday party. All of these are realities that funeral directors know.
have a little bit to do with the attitudes of people who attend the traditional ceremony of a funeral, having to atone for oversights, wishing when a loved one has died that we had had a chance to call them the week or two before, or perhaps spend that time with them a month or so before that they requested that we forgot or overlooked or ignored. Also, there's the opportunity they recognize for spiritual expression, usually always church-oriented, how the pastor of a church is there, at least some spiritual overtones and a kind of a restatement of one's religious convictions and beliefs, the gathering of family and friends about the casket or the coffin in which is the body of a loved one, and the conviction that we all know and understand that death is not the end of everything, that there just must be, we human creatures feel, something beyond death, something that keeps going. Hence the belief in the immortality of the soul, the belief in transmigration of souls, the belief in coming back as another human being or an animal or an insect or some kind of an afterlife. And so the living, in trying to atone, in trying to face reality, in trying to have the opportunity for spiritual expression, sometimes do go overboard in expensive funerals. Some funeral directors may encourage that. Most of them, I am sure, do not. They know that there is a very delicate situation here. As you've seen, they cannot really develop the kind of empathy where they, as it were, share the grief, yet they have to be kind, patient, understanding. And of course, it's quite a business. I've said myself, it's the last one I'd want to get involved in. I simply don't have the temperament for it. I don't know what I would be doing if I had to be talking to people every single day who came to me with this horrible shock, unreal, kind of a grief written on their face. They're shopping for a casket in which to place the body of a loved one or a member of their own family. It would be quite a terrible job as far as I'm concerned. I'm glad that there are enough people who have the kind of attitude, the kind of temperament, the kind of emotional control over themselves that they can be funeral directors, morticians, and the like, and I'm sure they have national associations and even go to conventions and talk about the business of burying of dead people. So it's quite a subject. But next time, what we want to do is to take a look at what the Bible says. We know the living shall die. We know there's a great deal of confusion about what death is. But the question remains, after death, then what? Next time, from the Bible, we're going to go thoroughly into that subject. We're going to show what is death. When a man dies, is it just like an animal dying, or is it somehow different? We know that people die. We know there have to be funerals. We know there have to be interments or perhaps even cremation. But the question is, what happens next? Next time, we're going to wade through a lot of scriptures in the Bible and answer these questions, after death, then what? You write for that booklet and find out what the Bible says. Not what relatives have told you, not what you've always thought or assumed, not maybe even what your church teaches. But then I can't apologize for what churches teach on that subject. You can believe practically anything, and people teach practically anything. But what does the Bible say happens at death? The Bible talks about a resurrection. Christ talked about the resurrection of the just and the unjust. How can you prove it to yourself? It's simple reading. It is not something it takes a professor from college to explain to you. It's something your children can understand. It's a book that is filled with hope. So write for that booklet, After Death, What Then? Now remember, all the literature I've mentioned on this program is absolutely free of charge. There's never any request for money, no follow-up. No one's going to call on you. We want to send it to you by return mail, absolutely free. It's gratis.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, brought to you by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales.